yesteryear.
Howdy, folks.
Yes, it is your old friend Singin' Sam. So let's just settle back and reminisce a bit. What do you say, huh?
With a nostalgic nod toward the Atwater Kent, we now present Same Time, Same Station, a chronicle of broadcasting's first half century.
Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
Tonight, we welcome back our guest of the last 2 weeks, Marvin Miller. As we rejoin his radio career, we find him on his way to Hollywood.
1939, I arrived in Chicago, and in 1944, also in April, I left Chicago for the coast. It had taken a great deal of mental turmoil to decide to leave Chicago because I had a minimum at that time of 45 radio shows a day, a week rather. 45 a week, that was my nut. And that's a lot of radio. Of course, some of those were five-minute shows, the Coronet Storyteller, but others were hour shows, like Chicago Theater of the Air. So before I came out, I cast around to see if I could maybe lay a little groundwork. The only thing that made it possible to leave without a great loss of income was the fact that three of the shows on which I had contracts in Chicago were up at the same time, within a matter of a week apart. One of them was Hildegard's Beat the Band. That was a lot of fun. Hildegard, the famous chanteuse, well-known nightclub chanteuse who divided her time 6 months in Chicago at the Palmer House and 6 months in New York, had a show for Raleigh Cigarettes. And it was an old show that had been kicking around an NBC property called Beat the Band, in which questions were asked of the band, and they had to play the number requested or parts of it. It was semi-ad-lib. A lot of it was planted, but the actual dialogue was purely ad-lib. But Hildegard liked me because, strangely enough, although on a nightclub floor, she could be the bald-headed front row visiting fireman's dream girl. She had a way of drawing them out. When it came to radio, she found it rather difficult to ad-lib. And I could, in some way, I don't know, always touch her off. And she relaxed and had fun. And we wound up with a sexy, chatty, funny show. Because she was always the sex image, you know, as a singer. But anyhow, she was leaving for New York. And she wanted me to go with her to New York. And that was really, I think, one of the things that pushed me over the precipice of decision. Because I went to the agency and said, I don't particularly want to go to New York now. If you wanted me on the coast, that would be great. And they said, as a matter of fact, we could use you on the coast. We have a show out there that we started here in Chicago, and now it's out there, and we're having problems finding the right announcer because he's got to double and do funny voices. And that show was the Red Skelton Show. So instead of going to New York with Hildegard, I managed to come to the coast with Red Skelton, or for or with Red Skelton. And there's another funny story in that. For about 3 or 4 weeks, Red treated me like somebody's left on the doorstep orphan. And I couldn't understand why. Red has always been a very serious comic. He is inherently a funny, funny man. And the things he does off the broadcast, or he used to do an after piece on his radio show just for the studio audience, because having warmed himself up on his radio show, he now wanted to go further, and he'd do all his famous visual gags like the Guzzler's Gin routine and the crazy thing where he was a bashful pianist, and when he turns to sit down at the piano, he knocks the support bar and the lid falls on him, and he gets stuck in the piano. He has a great routine of a fat woman with a girdle, and another one of an indecisive gentleman trying to take a seat in the middle of the theater, coming in from a side aisle. Hilarious sight gags, you see, which of course he used on his television show many times over, but this was in radio, and he'd do those things after the show for the audience. So knowing he was such a dedicated comic, that he loved comedy, he was a clown, I couldn't understand why he treated me like a stepfather, you know. I finally, one day after the show, one evening rather, in the Brown Derby, he came over to our booth And he said, Marv, I want to apologize to you. You've been such a joy to work with these few weeks. I've been a real heel. He didn't say heel, but... so far as you're concerned, I thought you were one of Freeman Keyes' spies. Freeman Keyes is the head of the agency in Chicago. And like most comedians, Red was a little paranoid, you know. He kind of figured that I was sent out to make a check on him and send reports back to the agency, which was anything but true. But from that time on, Red and I always got along beautifully, and I stayed his announcer until he was drafted. And he was drafted. And then I didn't get back with him when he came out of the service, because by that time I had a different cigarette account and couldn't handle it. It's just, you know, one of the things that happened. So when I came to the coast, I also became the announcer on Draft Star Playhouse. That was a five-a-weeker. The other show, which I think I've already mentioned, The Coronet Storyteller, which had started back in Chicago, I simply brought out with me. So having had 45 shows a week in Chicago and having rated the line in daily and weekly variety, which said Chicago's one-man radio industry moves to the West Coast, and that's what they said when I left, here I found myself opening in Hollywood with 11 shows, which for a newcomer wasn't too bad, you know, it really wasn't. Some of the people, by the way, who worked on Dress Star Playhouse were Gail Page, Rosemary DeCamp, and my old buddy Les Tremaine, whom, of course, I had worked with so long on First Nighter. Some of the other shows I picked up rather quickly after my advent in California were, first, The Billy Burke Show, and that, that wasn't the first one. The first one was Stars Over Hollywood. Stars Over Hollywood was a Saturday morning show which used either fading motion picture stars or young people whom the studio wanted to plug. If they were the young people, they didn't know too much about acting, and if they were fading motion picture stars, they usually hadn't done much radio, so it was a tough show to do. But we had some good shows, and one of my great triumphs a couple of years after I had left the show was to be called back as the guest star on it after I had made my motion picture advent.
In just a moment, we switch controls to California to the Dairy Rich show, Stars Over Hollywood, presented by Dairy Rich, the chocolate-flavored drink. And today, starring a man you've heard often on the air and seen frequently in top mystery pictures, Marvin Miller. There's the signal. We take you now to Hollywood.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Stars Over Hollywood. This is Art Gilmore greeting you from the movie capital of the world, where every week Bowie's Incorporated, makers of Dairy Rich, presents Stars Over Hollywood, headlining your favorite stars of screen and radio. Every week, new personalities. Every week, a new story. And every week, the same delicious drink, Dairy Rich. Now, here's today's Stars Over Hollywood guest, but actually, he's a member of the family who's come back home for a day. Marvin Miller.
Thanks, Art. I certainly had a lot of fun working on Stars Over Hollywood while you were gone. And it's surely nice to come back for a day.
It's doubly nice to come back as our star, fresh from fine motion picture roles in such pictures as Johnny Angel, Deadline at Dawn, and your latest with Humphrey Bogart, Dead Reckoning.
The pictures have been pretty nice to me, Art, but today it's radio and a nice, fast-moving detective yarn.
Oh, that it is. So let's get on with it. Now, you know what I have to do first,
though. Oh, of course. And a fine privilege it is to tell the folks about Dairy Rich.
Once an announcer, always an announcer, huh, Marvin? But you're right. Flavor-rich, nutrition-rich, and economical.
If I ever get my hands on you, wait up.
Bull. Ladies present, ladies present.
I have the blackjack. What now?
You just step out in the hall and be lonesome for a while. I got some private business to attend to with the bull here.
All right, Phil, but be careful. Remember what happened last time.
I will.
What business you think you're going to do with me?
Ask you a few questions.
I don't know the answers already.
You will. Turn around. It's a good little boy.
If you didn't have that rug...
Who killed Halloran? You or Mike?
Never heard of the guy.
Who paid you to frame me or help frame me?
No speak English.
Oh, no?
No. And if you didn't have that rod on me, I'd bust every bone in your body.
That's another thing I'm curious about. You know I won't shoot you, but I wonder just how good you are without your pal Mike along.
Put that rod away and find out.
That's just what I'm going to do.
You know, I like a good square fight myself.
Yeah?
And it'll give me a great deal of pleasure to give you a few good, solid, honest pokes. So I'm tossing this gun under the bed. Okay, both start something.
With pleasure.
With pleasure. Come on, get up, Bull. You aren't through already, are you?
But I ain't too. You...
Come on, Bull, on your feet.
I'll get you yet, you smart dick.
Footwork. A little slow, Bull.
Yeah. How was that footwork, chum? Now I'm going to kick your teeth out.
How was that headwork, chum? Handy gadgets, these blackjacks.
Oh, Laura.
Got here in the nick of time. What?
Well, why did you do that? I was doing all right.
Oh, you didn't look so good from where I was. And were you a sucker for that hop, step, and kick he gave you? Oh, brother.
Okay, honey. Maybe I did need a little help.
Oh, it's so nice to be appreciated. Well, what now, mastermind?
We'll wait until Bull comes to and find out who the boss is. He'll talk then, I'm sure.
Look, since you had his fingerprint on the bullet, why didn't you have the police arrest him and get it out of him legally?
And miss all this fun? Let the cops come later.
I was the announcer on that, I think, for about 2 years, and gave it up to do the Billy Burke Show, which followed it immediately on the same network. And the reason I did the Billy Burke Show was because I not only got a contract as the announcer, but I also was hired to play parts. I played two running parts who were boyfriends of Billy's in the plot. One was a pompous colonel. The other one was a weaselly little banker. And both of them were actually after her hand, so to speak. She was the fluttery widow, the type that she had played so often in motion pictures and everybody knew her for. It was a crazy show with the most obvious gags in the world, but it was kind of fun. And my brightest memory of that show was the time when the author, who either hadn't realized that I was playing both of these roles or else just forgot, wrote me into the show doing both roles. And I actually had a scene in which I had to fight myself in a closet. Now, of course, you must remember that in those days, tape was not used on network radio at all. In fact, it wasn't even around, I don't think, on the Billy Burke Show. This would have been the late 40s. So there was nothing that could be done to edit the one part into the other part afterwards. This is a live show. We did it. It went out on the air with all its fluffs and all its glory.
Well, it looks as if the $225 in the box on the shelf of Brother Julius's closet is going to be well guarded from a possible visit by the grease paint burglar. Alone in the house with a storm threatening, Miss Burke and Daisy are searching for Julius's shotgun.
I looked in the broom closet, Miss Billy. Nothing in there but the broom.
Well, bring it along, Daisy. We want to be ready for anything. Do you suppose... Oh, here's the gun. Up on the shelf.
Look out. Don't point that thing at me, Miss Billy.
Where do the bullets come out, Daisy?
Here, at the end with the hole in it. Is it loaded?
I don't think it's loaded. It doesn't feel heavy.
Well, the gun won't do no good without shells.
Do you have to put shells in it?
Yes, and if you wanted to shoot.
Shells? Well, what did we do with those shells we brought home from the beach that time?
Kind of shells, Miss Billy? You got to have shooting shells, cartridges.
Shooting shells and... Goodness, I don't know where to look for those. Well, we'll simply say that there are bullets in it. We'll bluff. That's what we'll do. If the grease paint burglar comes up, put the gun up to my shoulder and I'll squint down that pipe and I'll look mean and ornery. I'll look atrocious.
Miss Billy, where's the light?
Well, goodness, did I turn them off? No, I didn't turn them off. Did you?
No, it was the light that I guess.
Oh, Daisy, it probably burned out something at the powerhouse, one of those big transient farmers.
That's all we needed now, no light.
Oh, dear, it's as black as the Ace of Hearts. Are you frightened, Daisy?
Well, I can think of a lot of places I'd rather be.
No.
Let's find us a candle or something.
There's a candle up on the top shelf of the kitchen closet. Can you reach it?
I'm trying.
Something fell down. Are you you hurt, Daisy?
No, I ain't hurt. I just won't. But I got the candle.
Good. Here's a match. Oh, that's better.
Oh, God. I don't know which is the scariest, the dark or the shadows from this old candle jumping around.
Well, we mustn't be frightened. We have a gun, and I'll use it, too, even if we don't have any bullets. I thought I heard somebody at the door.
Did you think that, too? You don't want me to see who it is, do you?
No. Who do you suppose would be knocking on the door? Do you think it's somebody?
Yes, it could be somebody. Yes, I guess it must be.
What do we have to be afraid of, Daisy? We have a gun.
Yeah, but who's going to open the door?
Well, we'll both open it. Are you ready?
No. I'll go through the motion.
That's fine. Now, one, two, three.
Hello, Miss Berg. Dreadful night, isn't it?
Oh, Mr. Guthrie. Oh, come in.
Oh, thank you. My, it's a terrible storm. Oh, no lights in here. Well, you have a gun. Oh, don't shoot.
I wouldn't shoot you, Mr. Guthrie. This is in case the grease paint burglar should.
Oh, why are you looking at me that way, Miss Burke?
Are you sure you're Mr. Guthrie?
What? What are you saying?
You look just like Mr. Guthrie, and your voice sounds just like Mr. Guthrie. You must be the grease paint burglar.
Me? I'm Emil Guthrie.
Oh, naturally you say that, but I can see right through your disguise.
My disguise?
The smartest criminal always makes one mistake. It's the blow that breaks the camel's father. You made your mistake, Mr. Burglar. You look altogether too much like Mr. Guthrie, much more like him than he does.
But I am Guthrie. Julius asked me to stop by.
Oh, posing as a friend of the family. Daisy, we've caught the grease paint burglar.
You sure, Miss Billy? He looks like Mr. Guthrie to me.
This is the most insulting, preposterous dime going home.
Don't you try to escape. I have a shotgun. One false move, and I'll pull the trigger and fill it full of holes.
This woman's insane. Don't point that gun at me.
Hold up your hand, you impersonator.
Now be careful with that gun.
Oh. What you going to do with it?
Don't shoot.
We must lock him up until the police arrive. I know. We'll put him in Julius's closet. That's the only one with a lock on.
I'll sue you for this. You can't do this to me.
Oh, that's awfully big talk for a burglar. Now get in the closet and don't step on the shoes.
Help! Help!
Oh, well, Daisy, I guess we were just lucky. We have the notorious grease paint burglar under lock, stock, and barrel.
I hope he is the burglar, Miss Billy, just for your sake.
Well, of course he's the burglar. No one but the ham and egg actor could have looked and acted so exactly like Master Guthrie. Now, all we have to do is call the police and...
Somebody else at the door.
Somebody else? we don't have to worry now. We know it isn't the grease paint burglar. Come in.
Good evening, Miss Burke.
Oh, Colonel Fitz. Come in, Colonel.
Thanks, I will. It's rain coming down. Dirty weather.
Yes, very. It's raining cats and dogs. I hope you didn't step in a poodle.
Oh. Very clever, Miss Burke. You know, I saw a man standing in front of your house a few minutes ago. Decided I'd come over and see if you were all right.
Oh, that's very sweet of you, Colonel Fitz, but I think that with a shotgun and a broom and a candle, Daisy and I are doing famously.
Dad, what's the gun for?
Oh, you needn't be alarmed. The gun wasn't for you. We were waiting for...
Well, what's the matter, Miss Burke? Why are you staring at me?
Let me see your profile, Colonel.
My profile? Oh, you insist. Like it?
Mm-hmm. You look exactly like Colonel Fitz.
Who else could I look like?
Apparently, you can look like anyone you choose. Yes.
Take it easy, Miss Billy. You got one burglar, that's the limit.
Well, now, you have me a bit confused, Miss Burke. What's all this about burglars?
Daisy, I think this one is even more clever than the other one.
Who?
The one in the closet. But I can't quite make up my mind which is the grease-paint burglar.
Burglar? Me? Oh, now, see here, Miss Berg, I'm...
Put up your hands, you imitation Colonel Fitz.
Imitation?
You're going to get in trouble, Miss Billy. You got one burglar and two people. That just don't add up.
Well, I agree, Daisy. One of them is the grease-paint burglar and one isn't. But gracious, how can we tell which is which?
You take and leave of your senses, Miss Berg. Good night.
Hold, or I'll fire the whites of your eyes.
Now, look out. Don't pull that trigger.
You see, a rat without a gun is just a mouse.
What have I done? I simply came over to see...
Oh, naturally, to see if you could steal Julius's money. We know all about you, Mr. Burglar's grease pot.
Billy, if the burglar's dressed up like Colonel Fitz, then the one in the closet must be Mr. Guthrie.
You let me out of here, Billy Burke.
Who's that?
Don't try to make me confused. Somebody's a grease-paint burglar. Oh, dear. Why do you burglars have to come out on a night like this?
I'm not a burglar. I'm Colonel Fitz, your neighbor. I live across the street.
Well, naturally, you'd say that. Gracious, if we only had some light instead of this candle so we could see.
Oh, bosh. I've had enough of this foolishness.
Wait, you can't go. Not till we find out who the sheep in wolf's clothes is.
Now, be careful of that gun.
You simply have to understand. You may be Colonel Fitz, and again, you may not be. The grease-paint burglar is so clever, he might be anybody, even me.
No,
you'll find out who you are when the police come.
The police?
Yes, there, you see, if you really were Colonel Fitz, you wouldn't be afraid of the police. So, along with you, Mr. X, into the closet.
No, stop this. Stop it, I say.
Don't try to escape. I have a gun, remember. I have the buffer on you. Unlock the door, Daisy.
You're going to put them both in there?
Well, it's the only safe place.
Billy Burke, you pay for this. I'm going
hush,
to...
Hush. Stay right where you are. You're going to have company. Into the closet, Mr. X.
Who are you?
How'd you get in here?
Now, you be nice to each other. One of you is a burglar, but don't steal anything from each other.
I'll have you arrested for assault with a deadly weapon.
No.
Oh, the girl's out of her head. Do what she says, man.
Don't you tell me what to do. I came here on the honor of friendship, and that woman...
Oh, goodness. Hush, pop. Close the door.
Get me out of here.
Quiet, man. You wanted to shoot both of us?
Stop pushing!
Oh, who's pushing? Get off of my feet!
Heavens! Goodness, they make so much noise. Quickly, Daisy, call the police.
Well, I tell them.
Well, tell them that we caught the grease-paint burglar. Tell them the house was entered by two superstitious characters, both of them answering the description of the burglar. We want a policeman to come out to tell which is which, to separate the chaff from the wheaties.
Oh, you get the police out here, Miss Billy. You're liable to wish you hadn't.
There's no law against catching burglars.
No, but it ain't legal to shove folks in a closet with a shotgun, even if the gun ain't loaded. Mr. Guthrie and Mr. Fitz is liable to be who they really is.
Oh, number.
Billy!
Oh, now we're going to see something.
I have an hour before the train leaves, Billy, and I got worried about you with the storm and all.
Julius.
What happened to the lights?
Oh, they went out and... Goodness, so many things have happened, Julius.
My gun. What are you doing with my gun?
Burglars.
Burglars?
Oh, it's all right, Julius. We've caught him. He's locked in your closet.
What?
This grease-paint burglar. I read it in the paper. He walked into the house, you know, disguised as people, and he looks and acts and talks just like a friend or a relative, and...
Why are you looking at me?
Are you sure you're really Julian?
Billy Burke!
Oh, well, no, you're Julius. I'd recognize that nose anywhere. Oh, dear. For a moment, I thought you were the grease-paint burglar, too, Julius.
What the devil's been going on in this house? Who's in my closet?
Two suspects. One is the burglar and one isn't. So I had to lock both of them up.
Suspects?
Yes, first a man came disguised as Mr. Guthrie. Then, a little later, another man impersonated Colonel Fitz. We were just calling the police to...
Billy! You have Guthrie and Fitz locked up in my closet?
No, I'm not sure if Mr. Guthrie is Mr. Guthrie or if Colonel Fitz is...
Good
Fitz,
night! So... I asked them to come over, and now you... Oh, how am I going to explain? Let's get them out of there.
No, but Julius, I...
My friends, trying to be helpful. Colonel Fitz, Guthrie, this was a terrible mistake.
Yes, you should tell us.
Your sister threatened to shoot us, Julius. The girl's demented.
No, but Julius, the burglar.
Burglars? The idea, Billy. Our friend, Mr. Guthrie. Our good neighbor, Colonel Fitz. How could you have done such a thing?
Well, it's a tragedy. Lovely girl like your sister. I'm going, Julius. Don't feel badly. The girl isn't responsive.
What do you mean?
Good night.
Colonel Fitz, I mean... Well, Julius, how do you know?
You'll hear more of this, Julius. I'll have satisfaction for this indignity in the court.
Guthrie, listen.
Good night.
Billy Burke, this is the last straw.
Did I do wrong, Julius?
Did you do wrong? Locking up my friends, calling them burglars, what? And with a shotgun? Can't I leave this house for 5 minutes without some horrible thing happening?
I just didn't want your money stolen.
So, you lock up your suspected burglars in the closet with the money.
With the money? Oh, dear, I didn't think of that. Oh, good heavens. The nylon stockings Myrtle won. Oh, in the Listerine contest, they were there, too. Oh, well, oh, that was all right. They wouldn't fit Mr. Guthrie or Colonel Fitz anyway. Is the money still there, Julius?
Why, of course it's still there. Do you think that Guthrie or Fitz would...
Wait, there's someone at the door.
Probably the police to throw us all in jail.
Good evening, Miss Burke. I was on my way home, so I thought
but
I'd...
Guthrie, you just left.
Hello, yes. Guthrie. I'm glad to see you back. Come in, old man.
Well, thank you. I thought you'd gone, Julius. You said you were leaving town. You asked me to stop in and see if everything was all right.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Guthrie. You just left here a minute ago.
I did? No, not me, Julius. Oh. I've been at the bank. I'm on my way home.
Oh. You've been at the bank?
Oh, dear.
Then who was the guy who... It was the burglar. The grease paint burglar. In my closet.
Well, what's all this about burglars?
Grease paint burglar, he comes to the door and looks and acts and talks exactly like someone you know.
Oh.
So you see...
Is something wrong?
Mr. Guthrie, let me see your profile.
One of the funniest things about that show was that to get a studio audience to provide the laughs, and incidentally, they didn't dub in phony laugh tracks in those days either. When you got your laughs, they had to be real. And if you didn't put over a comedy line on a comedy show, you didn't get laughs. And that was anathema, you know. That bet you wasn't, you probably wouldn't be called back too often. But this show, the Billy Burke Show, they gave away free coffee and donuts on Saturday morning, and we always had a hanger-on crowd to laugh it up at the right places. Well, that was an experience, all right, announcing and playing two characters fighting each other on the same show. Another show that I started shortly after I arrived in Hollywood was a little dramatic show called Press Club, in which I played the star reporter lead. It was on for a client who had a mystery show of long tenure and one that everybody remembers. And having done the Press Club, the client felt very happy to have me assume the duties of announcer on The Whistler.
Signal Oil Company and your neighborhood Signal dealer bring you another curious story by The Whistler. Tonight, Blueprint for Suicide.
I am The Whistler. And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And that show, of course, I announced until its extinction some 12 years later, I think. I did the announcer, and during one portion of the show, right at the end of the war, Bill Foreman was the voice of the Whistler. This is an interesting split personality, if you ever heard it. The whistling that the Whistler did, which was purely a signature and had nothing to do with the plot, was done by a girl. And the reason that she did it was that she was the only one who could whistle in a 2-octave range. The music was all written by Wilbur Hatch, who was one of the house conductors at CBS. And he had written this incredible 2-octave whistling theme. The girl who did the whistling was named Dorothy Roberts. Nobody had any idea that a girl was whistling for the Whistler, who was male. The male who did the dramatic part, who was the narrator, he was a completely non-involved, sort of a wraith, a ghostly figure. He was Bill Foreman, who was also an announcer of no mean stature and did many shows on the networks. But he did a completely different kind of characterization. And during those last days of the war, something went wrong and somebody pulled the wrong string. And poor Bill Foreman got drafted, although he was overaged and had 3 kids. Well, it took the ordinary amount of red tape to get that straightened out and get him back out of service. And during the time he was in the service, thank goodness, he was assigned to Armed Forces Radio, so at least he was one of the few people who did what he was qualified to do. But the big point on this is that while he was gone, George Allen, the director-producer, came to me and said, Marv, I don't want to put somebody else in this role only to unseat them as soon as we can get Bill out. Would you mind doubling? Would you mind doing the voice of the Whistler, since you worked with Bill for so long now? You know what he did. So we worked on it, and by golly, I managed to get pretty close to his approach. So for about a year, I not only announced the show and did the Signal Oil commercials, but I also did the voice of the Whistler, and I think we have a sample of that.
The Pagliacci legend of the show must go on, even though the heart is breaking, has been played out many times upon the stages of the world. But sometimes it doesn't come off just right. For instance, take the case of David Dane, the comedian. He's one of the most popular performers in the theater. And as he stands out in the glare of the footlights on the stage of the Regent Theater, you'd think he would be the most carefree man in the world. Everybody loves him. He's got everything. Fame, fortune, a pretty wife. There she is, standing in the wings, watching him, smiling at his jokes. And anyone who saw you, Martha, greeting David as he comes off the stage, would be sure you meant what you say.
How is it, Martha?
Wonderful, darling.
Well, you better take another curtain, Mr. Dane.
Go ahead, David.
Okay. Did you really like it tonight, Martha?
Oh, you were terrific, darling. The audience loved every line.
I think the routine's getting a little worn out. I called my gag writers together for tomorrow. We'll work up some new stuff.
This routine seems all right to me.
Ah, some new gags won't hurt.
Yes, but...
But what?
How are you feeling, David?
Me? Fine.
You're not tired, are you? No feeling of strain?
Of course not, Martha. If you don't stop worrying about me, I'll take you to the doctor. Anyone's bound to get a little upset sometime. Don't let the other night worry you.
But it wasn't just the other night.
Well, the time before that, too.
Before that?
Really, darling, we've been married 4 years. I'm entitled to some lapses from perfection in all that time.
Of course, David, of course. I'm sorry I said that I did. You're right. It's just that...
Just what?
Just that... Oh, it's nothing, David. We can't stand here all night. Let's get down to the dressing room.
You wouldn't tell him, Martha. You know very well what you meant. And so does David. You think it's more effective just to leave it at that, for the time being, anyway. You go down to the dressing room with David and keep talking, just anything, just so that you can delay him until everyone else has left the theater. Then the two of you walk through the darkness backstage.
There's nothing so somber and eerie as an empty, dark theater, is there, David? Oh, it frightens me. So empty and... dismal. Oh, huh? I tripped over something.
Well, here, let me help you. After all this time, you should know the place as well as I do.
I'm all right. Now I know my way. Oh, here's the table. What's this on the table? It feels like a knife.
Well, that gives us the murder weapon. Now, at this setting, all we need is the corpse.
David, don't say that.
I'm sorry, darling. Here, give me the knife. Oh, hey, it's pretty sharp. It's not a prop. Let's have a look. Let's see. Oh, it's one of Marvello's knives for a super special knife-throwing act. See?
No!
Martha, what is it?
Oh, it's nothing.
Well, Martha, why did you scream?
Oh, just my nerves. I told you this place was frightening me. Get out of here.
Not your nerves, and you know it. I could see your eyes. You were terror-stricken. You were afraid of me.
No, it was just the way you were holding the match, David. It threw such a strange light on your face.
It wasn't just a match. There's a lot more to it, isn't there, Martha? A great deal more. It's what you started to say before when I finished my act. You wouldn't continue. And I know what you were going to say. You're worried. Worried about me. You think there's something wrong with me. Don't you?
Well, Martha, your little plan is working very well, isn't it? You started it only a few days ago, and already you have David believing that there's something wrong with him, that you're in terror of him. Now, Martha, what's the next step? You have that figure, too. It's just a little suggestion you've planned for the way home tonight. You get him to walk from the theater. The night air will relax him, you say. And soon you're coming to the river.
We should do this more often. I've always enjoyed this walk home along here. I used to like a stop at the river and stand on the bridge and look down into the water. Tonight...
Martha, listen, it's just that I'm a little nervous. I haven't been myself lately. I'll be okay.
Of course, darling, of course. You just forget about it.
But, Martha, I can't forget. You were frightened. You were afraid of me.
Oh, darling, no. It was just circumstances.
Circumstances, yeah.
Now, David, please. Look, we're on the bridge. Let's stop for a minute.
All right.
There. Isn't that beautiful, the moonlight on the water?
Uh-huh. Darling, I ought to be getting home. I have some letters to write before I go to bed.
Now, you're not going to stay up writing letters. You need rest. Besides, you can dictate them to your secretary in the morning.
Oh, I guess I forgot to tell you. Grace resigned last week.
You mean...
Yes, I don't have a secretary at the moment.
But... Oh, no, David, you didn't...
What?
You didn't frighten her, too, did you?
Martha, for heaven's sake, I didn't...
I'm sorry, darling, I'm sorry. It's only that... Never mind. Oh, I'm sorry Grace left. She seemed like a very nice girl.
Yeah.
But I'll take your letters until you get another one. But not tonight. You're going to rest tonight.
I guess I am. Sort of tired.
Of course you are, darling. Just try to relax a minute, and then we'll walk on home. There. I always found that standing here looking down at the water relaxed me. The river looks so cool and inviting.
Inviting?
Yes. David, did you ever look down there and feel like... Well, just like ending your troubles?
I don't know.
I did once when I was lonely and discouraged. I guess a lot of people have felt that way standing here. That's why they call this Suicide Bridge.
Very neat, Martha. Just a suggestion, nothing more. But a suggestion that will stick in his mind in the days to come. You can tell that by the look in his eye. But you don't press it. You just walk on home chattering about things. You're pretty satisfied with yourself, aren't you, Martha? You were even able to twist Grace's resignation the way you wanted it. You're happy to have her out of the way, too, aren't you? His pretty secretary might have made your job more difficult. But now you're so contented when you arrive home that you take time off for a phone call.
Hello, darling. Yes, I'm home. No, he can't hear. He's in the shower. I just wanted to hear your voice. Oh, yes, tomorrow, too. Mm-hmm, same place. Well, I must hang up now. Oh, I love you, too, darling. Goodbye.
Isn't that romantic? You love him, don't you, Martha? And he loves you. But what about your husband, David? How many times have you vowed never to leave him, and he never to part with you? And you know that he meant it. But you have your own ideas on the subject, a plan that's bound to work. It's dark now. David's asleep. But you're not. You can't sleep. You've got work to do. You've got a lot of work to do.
What's wrong? What is it? Where's that light? Oh, here.
Oh, David, why did you do it? Why?
Come on, get hold of yourself. Stop it.
Oh, I felt hands on my throat. I thought I was having a nightmare, but I couldn't breathe. I opened my eyes, and there you were, leaning over me, trying to choke me.
Martha, you don't know what you're saying. You were having a nightmare.
No, I wasn't.
It's impossible. I couldn't. It's so incredible.
Oh, Now, dear, don't excite yourself, please. You couldn't help it. You didn't know what you were doing. You must have been asleep.
It's fine. I'm not responsible for my actions. I tried to... Tonight I tried. One night I succeed. It's horrible, Martha. I can't go on like this.
You just get some rest now, David. Tomorrow you'll be feeling fine again.
Sure, I'll rest. And maybe tomorrow morning you'll be dead. I'm the one who should be dead.
Stop that, David.
Yes, I should be dead. But even dead, I'm worth nothing to you. If I committed suicide, you couldn't even collect my insurance.
You're talking nonsense, David. You know I'm not interested in your money. And I'll leave you right now if you don't stop talking of suicide.
You're much too good for me, Martha. Why did you ever marry me? You've stuck by me through so much trouble.
And I'll never leave you.
Never, Martha?
Of course not. Let's stop talking about it. As long as we can't sleep, would you like for me to read to you?
Anything you say.
Well, then, here's some of Oscar Wilde's poetry. I started reading it last night. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, okay with me.
Now, then, you just lie back and try to get to sleep, David. See. I guess I'll start with this. Doesn't seem familiar. He did not wear his scarlet coat, for blood and wine are red. And blood and wine were on his hands when they found him with the dead. The poor dead woman whom he loved and murdered in her bed.
What are you waiting for? Go ahead.
I don't think this is very good. Yeah, I guess I'll try something else.
No, I think it's excellent. Go ahead, Martha.
It's awfully long.
I've got time.
Well, I'll skip some. Let's see. Oh, I'll start here. Yet each man kills the thing he loves. By each, let this be heard.
Martha?
Shall I try a different poem, darling?
No.
Some kill their love when they are young, and some when they are old. Some strangle with the hands of lust.
That's quite a bedtime story, Martha. You picked it at random, with great care, and it hit the mark. David lay tensely listening, taking it in. Your schedule is working perfectly, Martha. But aren't you just a little worried? Doesn't it seem too easy, somehow too smooth? There can't be a slip-up, can there? No one knows, not even the man you love. When you meet him the next afternoon, he says...
You look radiant today, Martha. Why so happy?
Oh, it's a beautiful day, darling, meeting you. I really shouldn't be feeling so happy, though. I was up most of the night.
Oh, again?
Yes, it's David. Just isn't well. I can't imagine what's the matter with him. He acts so strangely.
Martha, darling, you can't go on like this.
Yes, I know, darling. I almost asked him for a divorce last night, but I just couldn't. Oh, he's so ill, and he needs me. It would break his heart.
But, Martha, you've got to think of yourself.
I know, but I just can't. I don't love him anymore, but I just can't hurt him now. Not now.
Well, I admire you for it, Martha, but what about us?
Oh, I don't know, darling. I don't know. Maybe later something will work out, but now I mustn't stay much longer. I have to get back to him.
Why? I thought we were going to spend the afternoon and...
I know, but he's having a conference with his writers, and his secretary quit him last week, so he needs me to take notes. I can't disappoint him. Please understand, darling.
Very clever, Martha. You're going home now, and you're thinking there will be many other pleasant afternoons with Jerry soon. You have no foreboding of disaster when you stand before the door of your house. You think it rather unusual the front door is locked. David must still be out. You take out your key, open the door.
Yes, Doctor.
You hear David's voice.
Well,
that's strange. Who could he be talking to? You stand by the door listening.
I don't sleep very well.
Then you realize the truth.
Yes.
David's on the phone.
No, it's awfully hard to explain.
And he's speaking to Dr. Stevens.
Dr. Stevens, as soon as you can. Well, as I told you, it's hard to explain over the phone. I know it's been a while since I was in. This is very urgent. Tomorrow morning we'll be fine. Now, only one thing, Dr. Stevens. This probably won't come up, but I wouldn't want my wife to know about this. I don't want to worry her. Yeah. Well, that'll be fine. Thank you, Doctor. Goodbye.
Well, Martha, that's not so good. It wouldn't do to have David go to the doctor and find out the truth that there's nothing at all wrong with him. It wouldn't do to have the doctor know about this either. You'll have to think of some way.
David?
In here.
Oh, where are the boys? I thought you were going to have a conference.
They'll be here soon. Chuck called to say they got held up.
Well, what happened this time?
I don't know. I think he told me I wasn't paying much attention.
What you need is a rest. I know. Tomorrow morning, bright and early, let's pack up and go to the beach.
I'd like to, but I can't. I've got to rehearse.
Well, I can wait. We'll come back in plenty of time for rehearsing.
Well, I'll have to go over to the theater early, see about props for the new routine.
All right, then I'll go along with you. I've got something to do there, too.
Well, there's no reason for you to get up so early.
But I must.
What's so important?
Well, I think your costume is ripped. I meant to check it last night.
I can take a look at it. If there's anything wrong, Mrs. Benson will fix it.
But, David, I must...
Well, then that's settled. Here they are.
David!
Oh, hello, Chuck. Where were you?
You didn't succeed that time, Martha. And you must stop David from seeing their doctor. You've got to act fast, very fast. But what can you do with all these people here? Except hammer away on the same old theme again.
Of course, I know songs aren't your usual style, David, but think of how this would go over. Now, here's the idea. You pretend you're a jockey, see? And as you sing about, I love to ride the winner down the stretch, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, and so on and so forth, why, you go through all the motions. Why, boy, it'll be the funniest thing that's hit the theater in a long time. And you can do it. Not many comedians could, but you could. Well, how does it sound here?
Sounds pretty good to me.
Well, it's not bad at all. With a little polishing, you could work into a terrific showpiece. What do you think, Martha?
It sounds pretty good, but,
But what?
Don't you think it's a little strenuous for you?
Strenuous? Oh, now, after all, Martha, he isn't really going to ride a horse over the hurdles, you know.
What do you think, David?
Well, I don't know. That is, I mean, I think maybe that...
It's easy to see that David will go places with your help, Martha. His writers are a little bewildered by your behavior, but you don't explain. The conference continues. You do your best to slow things up. You disagree. You suggest changes until everyone's worn out. But still, you won't stop. Because you've decided on a plan, and you're waiting, waiting and hoping. Luck is with you, Martha. The phone rings. You hurry over and answer it. You carry on a conversation. No one can hear what you're saying. You just tell the man that David's busy now, can't be disturbed. But you go on talking even after he hangs up. Finally, you hang up. David asks.
Who was it, Martha?
Just a wrong number.
That was a long, wrong number.
Well, he was hard to convince.
You feel happy now, Martha. Everything's running just right again. Now you can't wait until they leave. You want to be alone with David. So you rush things. Finally decide the new routine is just right for David. Perfect, in fact. And they leave. You turn to David.
I'm glad that's settled.
I think it's one of the best routines I've ever had.
Would you like to take a nap now?
A nap? I feel better than I have in a long time.
Oh, you want to rest before tonight's show.
Madam, I beg to differ. In fact, my idea is that we go out and celebrate. There's a cocktail party at the Bennett's. How about surprising him and showing up?
But you'll tie yourself out. You have a show to do tonight.
You know what? I'm going to try out that new routine. I'll prove to you what a great comedian you married. Come on, we'll go right to the theater from the party.
No, no, David. I wanted to talk to you.
You can talk to me at the party. Come on, a party is just what I need right now.
All right, David. Just as you say.
You gave in rather quickly, Martha. You decided a cocktail party might be just what you needed, too. Not that your spirits need any lift. It's just that the party atmosphere suddenly appealed to you as the very place to strike that final blow.
Well, David and Martha, I must say I feel honored having you here. You two have been behaving like hermits lately.
David's been working so hard.
I'm thinking of you every minute, Pearl. Where's Roy? I haven't had a talk with him in months.
In the kitchen, getting more ice.
I'll go and help him. I'm invaluable at that.
I doubt if you even know what ice looks like. You put so little in your glass.
That's my unselfish spirit. I don't want to take the other fellow's share. Excuse me.
David's feeling good. You encourage him, bring him more drinks, laugh and chatter. It's a very gay party. But it's getting late. You still have work to do. That empty balcony will serve very well. You and David can go out there.
Oh, it feels good to get out in the air. It's beginning to get a little dizzy.
The air does feel good. I hate to leave here, though. I'm having such a swell time. We'll have to go in a few minutes or I'll be late.
Are you really going to do the new routine tonight?
Sure, it'll knock them over. Tonight I'll show that audience the true David Dane, and by tomorrow night I'll have that act so polished up the shine will hurt their eyes.
You'll have to rest up tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You can sleep all morning.
Yeah. I mean, no, I have to go out.
You can sleep all morning, David.
No, I can't.
Yes, you can, David. You don't have to see Dr. Stevens tomorrow.
Martha, what are you saying?
I know about Dr. Stevens.
But how could you? You weren't there.
It was Dr. Stevens who called during the writers' conference this afternoon.
But he promised...
I know, David, I know. He promised not to tell me. But he had to call. He had to talk to me.
I don't understand. He promised...
He didn't know what to tell you.
Well, if it was just to break the appointment, I don't see why he had to make such a ceremony out of it.
Oh, I wish it were that, dear, but it wasn't. You see, he didn't know what to tell you after he examined you.
Well, how could he until the examination was over? After all, if I wanted my doctor to be psychic, I'd go to some sort of spiritualistic medium.
No, David, please, darling, you don't understand. He realized why you wanted to see him, and after all, he knows you, and... Well, he didn't see any point in examining you, but he was willing to go through the motions. He wanted to talk to me about what to tell you. I mean, how much to tell you. Oh, David, I'm telling this very badly.
On the contrary. You're making it very clear.
No, I'm not. It's just
that
I can't...
There's nothing any doctor can do but break it to me gently. That's it, isn't it? That's what it amounts to.
Hey, David, you're going to be late for the show.
Yes, by all means. I mustn't be late for the show.
Martha's timing was perfect as usual. She doesn't have much more left to do. You trust her, David, and she trusts you to do the right thing. No pity moves her as you falter out onto the stage. As you stand before the audience, laughter greets you. The audience knows David Dane always puts on a good show, and they're waiting. But you just stand there.
How about it, Dave?
Oh, come
on, Dave.
In a moment, they're calling to you, David, and you start your routine falteringly. Within a minute, they're laughing. But this time, it's not with you, David, but at you. The audience you usually hold in the palm of your hand has become a fearful thing. And all of Martha's insinuations come up and overwhelm you suddenly. You break. You can't go on. But you try, even though you know this is the end of David Dane, comic. Martha's leaving the theater now, even though David's still on stage. Yes, Martha, those who see you leave think you can't bear the sight of David's failure. But that's not exactly the reason. You don't want to wait for David. You'd rather drive off in the car and leave David to walk home alone. Walk home alone. And pass by the clear, inviting waters under Suicide Bridge. You go back to the house and wait. The phone call probably won't come for hours. You keep watching the clock. 11:30. Midnight. You don't want to be far from the phone. You curl up on the big chair in front of the make-believe fireplace. You're almost wishing this were all make-believe, too. Almost. The phone still doesn't ring. Your eyes won't stay open. It's almost 1 o'clock. You're fast asleep, Martha.
Martha? Martha? Martha?
You don't hear him, Martha.
Martha?
All these days and nights have made you very tired, so tired that you sleep soundly now. And David doesn't see you hidden in that big chair facing the fireplace. It looks as if your plan didn't succeed, Martha. Not the water. No, not for David, the river. There's another way, a surer way. No one can see him and stop him. You'd better wake up, Martha. Can't you hear that sound? It's gas. Gas to take David's life. Gas, Martha. You are right to trust David. He'll always do the honorable thing. He won't burden you with himself anymore, Martha. But it's getting late. Now wake up now, or you won't ever know how your plan succeeded.
David. David. Gareth. Gareth. Oh, David.
Oh. You're awake now, Martha. But you're weak. You're trying hard to move from the chair. You're weak, Martha. Too weak. You can barely stand up. Slowly and painfully, you try to reach the kitchen. Then you'll turn off the gas. Then everything will be all right.
David. No.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending of tonight's story. Meantime, because car batteries are still on the list of critical shortages, your Signal gasoline dealer wants to...
The Whistler was one of the last radio shows to go off the air, and incidentally, it also fathered a series of motion pictures, which, interestingly enough, which were done by Columbia. You never saw the Whistler. He was only a shadow on the wall. And in the pictures, I was always the voice of the Whistler, which is kind of funny. Funny coincidence. Poor Bill never got a chance to do those because they called me the first time while I was doing the voice of the Whistler. And even after Bill came back, they said, no, they were used to working with me and they wanted to keep me on the series. The star of the series, and he never played the same role twice. He was always just the star. Was Richard Dix, of all people, one of the last of the great heroic figures in motion pictures, if you recall.
Every 2 weeks for a battery checkup. It's part of your Signal dealer's complete service to help your car run better, look better, and last longer. And now, back to the Whistler.
Martha, you figured it perfectly, up to a point. You hadn't figured on David choosing that way. But when you woke up to find the apartment filled with gas, you tried desperately to reach safety. But you couldn't make it, could you? Too bad, Martha. And the real tragedy of it for you was you figured it all wrong. You needn't have played such a dangerous game at all. If only you could have known the things that David put into the suicide note he wrote just before he turned on the gas. They found it beside your two bodies next day. It read,
"Dearest Grace, please forgive me for this. I couldn't help myself. You were right when you resigned as my secretary. Our love was doing terrible things to us both. It made me subconsciously hate Martha enough to try to kill her in my sleep. I should have left her, but I couldn't. She was so tender and understanding. And she kept telling me how she'd never leave me. I couldn't tell her that I really loved you. Goodbye, Grace. David."
Monday at 9 o'clock, the Whistler will bring you another strange tale. The Whistler is broadcast for your entertainment by the marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories, and by your neighborhood Signal dealer. This program, directed by George W. Allen, with tonight's story by Geraldine Merkin, music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is Marvin Miller speaking and suggesting that you let every traffic signal remind you that you do go farther with Signal gasoline. Yes, you do go farther with Signal. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Reminiscing, I feel you near. Once more, you're my love of yesteryear.
Be with us next week for another nostalgic look at radio of yesteryear.
And now it's just about time we were picking up our memories and moving along our way. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these songs and the memories that go with them, as much as I've enjoyed bringing them to you. And I'll be keeping my weather eyes peeled. Yes, sir. Looking for you all to join us the next time we drop around this way for a friendly little get-together. And I hope that'll be real soon, folks. And until then, this is your old friend, Singin' Sam, saying goodbye for now.
Same Noontime Same Station is produced for KRLA News and Public Affairs by John Price. Associate producer, Cam Currier. Special research by Martin Halpern. And I'm Bill Browning. Our thanks to Marvin Miller for the memories and transcriptions which made up tonight's program. Next week, the further adventures of Marvin Miller. You'll hear Frank Sinatra as he sounded in 1945. Luella Parsons, Gordon McGregor.
I know you won't want to miss it, so be sure to be with us next week at this same time, same station.